All right. Last week, I started by saying that we've got kind of three streams that have converged to this present moment. One of the streams, of course, is this painting that shows St. Paul in chains. Last verse of the book of Colossians, he asked the Colossians to remember his chains. And then we've been reading, picking at David Brooks' book, How to Know a Person. And we've also been taking the temperature of our Christian discipleship as followers of Jesus with the seven commands that he gives in Matthew chapter 5. And we've entitled this series that started back in Epiphany and continued on through Lent and now into Easter, we've called it The Problem. I think intuitively we sense as believers that there's a problem. And we also intuitively sense that it's not just them. It's not just the others. It's not the people that we don't get along with. I think as followers of Christ, we all struggle with doing the right thing, as we'll see today, being a reasonable person. Beyond that, being a magnanimous person. We hear it in the text today. If you go hunting for two-mile Christians, you might not find any. You might not even find any one-mile Christians, never mind two-mile Christians. Instinctively, if someone assaults us, our reaction is to strike back, to take vengeance. And so Jesus is doing battle with this on Friday, Friend Day. So the rule of Bruner, Sunday, just review it with me. Sunday is Scripture Day. Monday is Mercy Day. Tuesday is True Day. Wednesday is Wedding Day. Thursday is Truth Day. Friday is Friend Day. Saturday is Sanctity. So we're on Friday. My take of these days of the week, I'm tempted to say that is that they get worse and worse, but I'll say that they seem to inflict a deeper wound as the days go by. And of course, Saturday is Sanctity, when Christ commands us to love our enemies, is of course the most difficult thing, and that sends us to our knees and back to church on Sunday to sit under the authority of Scripture. So Frederick Dale Bruner says that Friday is the Friday command of peacemaking. The command of peacemaking is Jesus' command against revenge. So he starts in this 38th verse of Matthew chapter 5 by saying, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This law was a law that was not only for the Old Testament people of God, it was also an ancient world law. You might have heard of the Code of Hammurabi. This goes back as far as 1800 BC. God gave the law to Moses around to maintain peaceful relationships among people, to maintain civility, which we're sorely lacking in our culture in the year 2024, to maintain civility, that this was a law of justice that was in place. If you lost an eye, and we see this still in Middle Eastern countries today, that to maintain the fabric of justice, then everybody operated under this law that you were going to receive the same kind of punishment, and this way, maybe it would restrain you from gouging out someone's eye or murdering someone or doing violence to another human being, is that justice required then that the punishment would be commensurate with the crime. So Jesus is doing battle with this. I'm glad that you like the people that you like, but even the world does that. That's the way the world functions. I'm telling you to love your enemies, and I think loving Saturday becomes an extension of Friday. on Friday, we're focused on people who are not necessarily friendly, those people with whom we may not have anything in common. If the Roman soldier conscripts you, volunteers you to carry his burden for a mile, you are supposed to volunteer to go another mile. Friday's command kind of introduces us to this idea of doing stuff we don't want to do. Now, in the me culture in which we live, people will say that that violates their will and their individual rights. If all we do is live by our own individual desires and wants, then the world will become, and it is increasingly becoming, even in public spaces where we are to interact with one another, there is almost a lack of communication. Really, it's a sickness in our culture, particularly for Generation Z, and the sociologists begin to track the decline of personal, not virtual, but personal, one-on-one, embodied, not disembodied, communication between people from the year around 2010. I joined Facebook in 2009. I have 779 quote-unquote friends on Facebook. But we all know that if I were to ask you this morning, name the person or persons who are your core friends. Now, I'm going to help you with this because you may be struggling right now to even think of one person. You may have hundreds or thousands of people who are Facebook friends, and their friendship, for whatever it is, requires a certain amount of maintenance. When Dan Scott posts something on Facebook, I feel obligated to read it and to hit the like it thing or comment. Because I want, first of all, to know that I took notice of it, that I read it. If you're going to critique something that someone says, first you have to compliment them and say things like, you know, this is a great post that really got me to thinking. Amy is just the consummate perfectionist when it comes to being polite on Facebook. If you ever make a comment on any of Amy's posts, she immediately, I don't know what kind of job she has, but apparently her employers don't care that she's monitoring Facebook all day long, because you can make a comment on her post and within seconds, thank you, Pastor Allen. We love you guys too. There is a liturgy. Facebook has a liturgy, a pace, a rhythm. We know that true friendship is exhausting. We see that in this passage today. True friendship is exhausting. True friendship requires a price to be paid. If Christ was the friend who's stuck closer to us than a brother, then we see the cost that was exacted for him to tell his disciples, I don't call you servants or slaves anymore, I call you friends. So we are living in a culture where communication of some sort is more available to us than ever. Text. Do they still call X what you do on X a tweet? I don't know. As someone told me the other day that they knew a person who was going through a divorce. And the two people in the divorce, the one person would text nasty things to the other person. And the other person resorted to artificial intelligence to construct a response. And the response was like, well, thanks so much for taking the time to text me today. And so the person now doesn't even read what their nasty ex or soon-to-be ex had actually texted them. They just say, construct a response and hit send. If you are in public spaces, and I'm glad to see that nobody's on their phone this morning, God bless you for that, but if you're in public spaces, people, even in a crowd, will be doing what? Pretty much. Even a family at a dinner table out at a restaurant. Young people spend hours a day playing games. But you see small children going into stores and restaurants and they got their iPads and their iPhones and their headphones. And they are living their life in a virtual world. Jonathan Haidt, he actually calls it now a form of mental illness. We have all succumbed to virtual reality addiction. And I think one of the ways of combating this, and I'm just going to throw this out there this morning, something for you to consider as we look at this passage, is that maybe one of the things that we do on Friday is to actually, we have to think about this maybe. Maybe it'll take us many Fridays to think about it. On Friday, we would actually set aside our virtual reality friends and actually engage with a real person. The Friday command of peacemaking is Jesus' command against revenge. Let me tell you this story too, and then we'll get into this more. So I read an article online. Now that I've preached against virtual reality, let me share with you an article that I read online. This lady, the article was about a lady who'd got on a plane. She said, I like to sit next to the window because I like to look out the window when I'm flying. So you know how it is when you get on a plane. I usually sit all the way in the back because statistically, if the plane crashes, the tail has a better chance of surviving. It's a little quirk on my part. Of course, if the plane does survive and there's a fire, you have a long way to go to get out. But okay, all right. Maybe not if it has, you know, this is why I don't fly anymore. She reserved this seat, and you never know who's going to sit in the middle seat and the aisle seat. You know, everybody, as they're coming on the plane, unless you're flying, I guess Southwest has a different way of boarding a plane. I can't remember. But everybody usually either sits next to the window or next to the aisle, and nobody wants that middle seat. Well, this flight was pretty full, so there was another lady that sat in the middle seat. This lady sat down, and she reached over the person who was sitting next to her, next to the window, and pulled a shade down. Do you see how social interactions function? This is really what we have going on here. Jesus is saying that your social interaction, there's a degree of fluidity. It needs to be well greased. We often don't think about these practical matters. So she didn't ask. She just reached over and pulled it down. The lady sitting next to the window pushed it back up. The lady in the middle waited a few minutes and then reached across. Because the lady in the middle wanted to turn on the reading light, even though it was day, and read the book. So if I remember the details of the story correctly, the lady sitting next to the window says, okay, all right, you want to play that way. They haven't spoken yet. She said that she made sure throughout the whole flight that the light reflected off her iPhone watch directly in the eyes of the lady sitting in the middle seat so that she had difficult reading. And finally, it culminated once the plane landed and people were disembarking and the two ladies had words. And the lady who sat by the window said, you're rude, you're vulgar, blah, da, da, God, da, 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 da. We seem to be obsessed right now with the assertion of self and most unwilling at this point to de-escalate things. Your right to express yourself ends where my nose begins. You can threaten me, but if you're going to punch me, then we have a problem. On Friday, so catechetically, we seek relation of friendship with the unfriendly because of Jesus' command. Yet it needs to be insisted, Bruner goes on to say, that Jesus' command is not a command to civil magistrates to disarm. So there are some extreme pacifists who have taken this teaching, if someone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other cheek for them to strike you. But the teaching doesn't begin there. The teaching begins with, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now that describes the legal system in ancient cultures, and to a great degree, it describes how civilizations function today. In other words, the punishment has to fit the crime. You may have heard in the news this past week, the young man, 22-year-old man that was driving his car crazy and hit the girl, pinned her against the car, and both her legs had to be amputated. He was sentenced to almost 19 years in prison. So in our legal system, then we have limits on how much jail time a person can be. It has to fit the crime. So this is not a command. Jesus is not saying we have to do away with that whole system and everybody just has to embrace evil as it happens to you. The system is in place, but in our personal relationships with people, so this is an important distinction to make, it needs to be insisted that Jesus' command is not a command to civil magistrates to disarm. It is a command to disciples. If you're a disciple, raise your hand this morning. It is a command to disciples to seek to make peace in all difficult personal and public relations. So we have a justice system. Jesus is not saying we're going to dismantle the justice system, but he is asking his disciples to practice the law in a magnanimous way, to not stand on your rights, but at times to surrender your rights for the sake of mercy. I've never experienced what it is like to have a relative or a close loved one be injured, and as a family member to sit in the court while the defendant, the person who may have done the violent act, is judged. I'm always surprised at how vengeful family members can be. Sometimes hear people say, I will sleep better knowing that this person is in jail rotting away and someone has thrown away the key. And I'm like, I fully admit that I've not been put in that position, so maybe I would feel that same way. But there is kind of an instinct among us that if you do me wrong, I'm going to do you wrong back. So the lex talionis, the law of the tooth, ends up with a world where everybody is toothless and blind, right? If that's going to be the law, then everyone is going to be wronged and everyone is going to wrong someone else at some point. Jesus is doing battle with this. And he's suggesting something that on first reading is absolutely outrageous. But he's not suggesting that the criminal justice system, the civil justice system, should be dismantled. He is just saying that in our personal relations, look at this, in our personal and public relations that are difficult, this is something that we need to keep in mind. Now, look with me in Matthew chapter 25. In Matthew chapter 25, at the end of this chapter, we have Jesus teaching on the end of the age, the final judgment. If you look, verse 31, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people from one from another as a shepherd. Interesting today. It's Good Shepherd Sunday. He will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father. Verse 41, then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. The picture that is presented, sometimes we sing that song. He's got the whole world in his. He's got the whole world in his left hand, right hand. Yesterday, I was planing some wood. I had 8 pieces of wood, 6 feet long. And you plane incrementally, and so there I have a stack that's 8. Sometimes I get confused when there's 4 in this stack and 4 in that. Which ones have I fed through the planer and which ones haven't I? So yesterday, you know what I did? I said, right now, I'm planing goats. So when I turned around and saw 4 on the left and 4 on the right, I said, what am I planting? I'm planting goats. I'm planting these 4 are left. See? What am I planting now? I'm planting sheep. See, back and forth I went. So it's interesting because Martin Luther, of course, in Europe, before the Reformation, civil governments and the church were together. Holy Roman Empire. Luther proposed that the two authorities should be separated. So he says, because in the world, Christ has the whole world in his hands, there's a left-handed kingdom, which has to do with civil magistrates, politicians, kings, and there is a right-handed kingdom, the kingdom of the sheep, that has to do with the church. And so that in the left-handed kingdom, where the civil magistrates are appointed to deal with lawbreakers, murderers, rapists, thieves, there's the law of justice, an eye for an eye and tooth for tooth reigns there. That's how we keep civil order. Because the world, to bring in another analogy, the parable of the tares and the wheat, parable of the weeds and the wheat, what is Jesus' advice? Is to let them both grow together. Remember that? Let them both grow together. Don't try to weed because the tares look so much like the wheat and their roots intergrow together that weeding the field is going to do more damage than good. So his advice is let them both grow together. And at the end of the age, the angels will come and they will correctly divide the weeds from the wheat. This then, post-Reformation now, and in Western civilization, this then becomes the basis for how we live, how sheep and goats live. Now, some people say, you know, the world is filled with nothing but sheep. And I will say, did you drive the church this morning? Did that person that cut you off doing 80 miles an hour on 270, do you consider them to be a goat or a sheep? Well, if you're charitable, all you did was say, bah. You might have said something else. You know, you got butted by a goat. That's always a surprise. I haven't been around many goats, but they will come at you at your most vulnerable moment. So I don't think I have to argue that point this morning. We do live in a world of sheep and goats. Jesus said, how do the sheep get along with sheep? How do the sheep get along with goats? Well, sometimes we allow the left-handed kingdom to do its job. So when Paul makes the admonition in the New Testament that we should not go to the law courts with our brother, he's picking up on this teaching of Jesus that amongst us, as followers of Christ, our stony heart has been transformed into, as the Old Testament calls it, a heart of flesh. So that we as believers don't always insist on standing on our rights, but we allow this law of mercy. We do not assert our rights, but we introduce something else. So every so often in the news, you will hear of a court case. A child has been murdered. A child has been grievously abused. And the family of that child, who are believers, and sometimes we'll read about this, they actually make friends in prison with the person who's serving time for the injustice because of their Christian convictions. When you get back to your virtual reality selves, you can Google that and find all sorts of cases. So this is an important note. It's not doing away with police. It's not defunding the police. It's not saying that we don't need the court system. It's not saying that, you know, although I do kind of believe what's 100 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean, a good start. I kind of feel that way sometimes, that they have a license to be crooked if you've ever had any dealings at all. But if you're in trouble, then you're happy to see a lawyer show up at some point. But this is not a call to do away with the system. We still live in a fallen world. We still live in a world where not everybody are sheep. There are sheep and goats. And so the law, in that sense, is charged with keeping the peace in civil society. But as believers, as Bruner says, we ought to seek to make peace in all difficult personal and public relations. So God has, this is Luther, God has therefore ordained two regimens, the spiritual, by which the Holy Spirit produces Christians and pious folk under Christ. That's the right-handed kingdom. And the secular, that's the left-handed kingdom, which restrains unchristian and evil folk so that they are obliged to keep outward peace, albeit by no merit of their own. So evil men have to be restrained. And that is the job of the left-handed kingdom. In the right-handed kingdom, there is, in addition to that, there is this added layer as believers, as followers of Christ, that is focused on the law of non-self-assertion. So Bruner says, justice continues to be required by law in all civilized communities today. So I'm standing in the neighbor's yard talking to him, and guy on a dirt bike comes down Shepley, just having it wide open. He had to be doing at least 60 miles an hour down the hill across the bridge. My solution to this for the left-handed kingdom is let's put a stop sign down at the bottom of our driveway and some speed bumps. Now, if you ever go up to the top of the hill over here at Tully and turn right, you'll see that the village of Riverview has put in three speed bumps once you get crossover from Bell Fountain Neighbors into Riverview. I've been told by Bell Fountain Neighbors authorities that, it's such a problem because we have to get approval by the state. But when I talked to a trustee in Riverview, they said, no, our roads that we own as the village, we can put speed bumps in if we want. Mary across the street says, they're not going to stop at that stop sign anyways, and they're going to go speeding right through that stop sign, and they're going to plow their car right into my living room. I don't want a stop sign down there. So miraculously, we have people that speed both ways here in Shepley Hills. This is beautiful downtown Shepley Hills. That's what the subdivision was. And so what is the civil solution to that? Well, it seems to me, if you go up this morning, take the long way home, go up to Tully, turn right, and go down, and that'll take you over to Chambers, and then you can go on. You cannot do more than 5 miles an hour over those speed bumps. If there's a speed bump after down in here somewhere, down the hill, but you know why they don't want to do it? Is because of the school buses. because the school bus drivers are going to complain. Oh, you know, I'm rushing to get these kids to school. Now I got to slow down for these speed bumps. Well, you just have to do 60 on Bell Fountain then to make up for it. This is the civil system. I talked to the neighbor across the street about his fence that he's putting in. So I said, did you get a permit? I knew he didn't get a permit because of the kind of fence he's putting on. See, so the left-handed kingdom then negotiates, you know, strong fences make for good neighbors. But where the left-handed kingdom says, before you can put a fence up, you got to come up with a drawing. Show us where you're going to put the fence and what kind of fence you're proposing. We have governance over that. Every man did that which is right in his own eyes is pandemonium and chaos, right? Who are they to tell me what I can do with my property and where I can put my fence? Well, if you want that, move to Montana. Or if you really want that, go start a Christian nation somewhere and good luck with that. See, so the left-handed kingdom is there for a reason. But in the right-handed kingdom amongst sheep, sheep are defenseless. Sheep are not very smart. Sheep can't see very far. We need this law in sheepdom. We need this law of kindness towards one another, this law of magnanimity, this law of saying, you know what, I didn't really feel like going with you before the first mile, but you know what, I'll go with you another mile. You know, I'm kind of cold. Yesterday I was cutting the grass on the mower and I was like, what? It's freezing. I had to actually go dig out a pair of gloves somewhere. Thank God I found them because my hands were frozen on the mower. Justice continues to be required by law in all civilized communities today, as in Jesus' treatment of the earlier commandments against killing and adultery. See, so the Ten Commandments, fundamentally for Western culture, they are like the bedrock of how our society functions. Marriage is good for our society. Therefore, at least up until this time, we took the commitment to marriage seriously, and now we have no-fault divorce. Marriage is still very popular, but we have people who say, you know, there's no need to be married. As in Jesus' treatment of the earlier commandments against killing and adultery, this commandment against injustice is not abrogated by Jesus. It is deepened. Political society must continue to keep the old commandment of justice. This is part of the problem, right? Part of the problem that we have experienced personally in North County is the Ferguson effect. And we have to, as Bruner says, I think, in the next statement, we have to allow these voices of pacifism to speak. You know, when there is injustice in the justice system, when the justice system is too heavy-handed, we need someone to speak up and say, look, my civil rights are being violated. But what we have all lived with in the past 10 years is because of the threat of the federal government over these municipalities in North County of being sued is that the police have basically said, and now, because policemen can be personally sued now, they can be personally sued. Who would want to be a policeman? This is Chrysostom, the golden tongue preacher from, I don't know, the 3rd or 4th century. Whereas thou sayest, because he commanded to pluck out an eye for an eye, therefore he's cruel. People are saying, well, that's a cruel thing for the Old Testament to teach. Chrysostom goes on to say, I say that if he had not given this commandment, then he would have been cruel. So how do you keep people from killing each other, from doing violence to each other? Sometimes violent people have to be restrained, and that's part of the problem that we live in, and we struggle with it every day. People driving, talking to this new guy across the street, he said, yeah, we moved from Washington, the state of Washington. He said, I kind of see that, you know, here in St. Louis, people don't observe the stop signs or the red lights. I said, yeah, it's part of what we've got going on. Unless the law, you see, this is one of the points that Paul makes. Unless the law is written on your heart. See, how was it that the Gentiles who had not received the law practiced more of the law than the Jews who had received the law? How did that happen? So in a culture, in a civil society, if there's not a sense of the rule of law amongst us in the left-handed kingdom, then we have what's going on in the world today, and that is a problem. But Bruner says, disciples go farther. See? So this is all Jesus is saying. You want to hit me on the cheek? I'm going to go farther. Hit me on the other cheek, too. You need a coat? Here, take my underwear. You need money? I remember years and years ago when I worked for Central Hardware, we had a lot of calls in the city. Our manager told us, now, if you have a call in the city, just schedule it for early in the morning. I made a lot of calls on the north side, and normally the people that you were going to, they were good people, and they would, if they knew you were coming at a certain time, they would watch for you so that you could you could escape with your life from the car to the house. One day, I went from the car to the house, stood on the porch, and nobody answered the door. And I turned around, there was a guy coming up the steps behind me. And he said, you got any change? I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid. I said, let me see what I got here. And I dug down in my pocket, I had a quarter or nickel or dime or something, and I just grabbed it and I held it out like that. Just as soon as I held it out, he grabbed it and took it and left. Well, in some ways, I felt violated. I was also relieved that the situation hadn't escalated into asking, like, you got any more money? Because in that situation, according to this commandment, if somebody's asking to borrow, which I guess that's what he was doing, disciples go farther. In a life that constantly experiences injuries to honor, the meaning of the slap example, unfair or litigious treatment, the meaning of the shirt example, sues you, someone sues you, exploitation, the meaning of the forced smile, these people are just taking advantage of me. Have you ever said that? That's not right. They're just taking advantage of me. Well, as a Christian then, I have the right to resort to the left-handed kingdom, to the letter of the law, but is this an opportunity for me to let the light shine so that they might glorify my Father who is in heaven? Brothers and sisters, that's not an easy choice to make. Because nobody wants to be a sucker. We just don't want to be a sucker. But I would rather err. So a couple years ago, I was down here. Quick Trip is an amazing place for con artists and shysters to show up down here. So you always take your keys with you, your phone with you, your wallet with you, you lock the car. I was gassing up down there one day, and the car pulls up real quick. Guy jumps out of the car, gets into the driver's seat of the car in front of me, like expecting there to be a key there, and he was going to drive off with the car. The lady's putting gas in her car. No key, jumps back in, and they peel. And I'm standing there like. So I was down there gassing up, and a car pulls up. And I told you this story before. A man couldn't speak English. What I assumed to be his wife and daughter were in the back seat. And in his broken English, she was Spanish, I think, or Mexican of some sort. I have an emergency. I need to get to Memphis, and I have no money. He's holding this chain. And he said, this chain. And eventually I looked at it. It said 24 karat gold on it. And he said, can you give me money for this chain? And right then, you see, am I going to say, hey, buddy, listen, if you don't get out of my face, I'm calling the cops. Or right? That's one choice. And sometimes you do choose that. Or do I say, okay, I chose to believe the man's story. Now, I think that I was probably conned because I showed the necklace to Andrew, and Andrew knows everything. And he says, yeah, this is no way this is 24. He's still got the necklace, by the way, which kind of makes me think that it is 24 karat gold. It's complicated, brothers and sisters. It's complicated. So all I could get from the ATM was $300. You know, you can't withdraw more than that. So I go into the ATM and Quick Trip. I'm going to err on the side of mercy. People just must see that sign over my head that says soft-hearted sucker, SHS. Right up. So I gave them the money. Sometimes when people ask me, you know, I don't have any gas in my car, I say, or ask for money, I've prayed with them, and I've actually said, God, while they're hearing, it's kind of like I'm holding them hostage. You want a tank full of gas, you're going to have to live through this prayer first. And in the prayer, I say, God, I don't know if this person's lying to me or not. This could be a total con. If it's not, then I bless them. If this is some act of thievery, you know, in the end, you're going to make this right. At least I feel better. You know, something in me felt good. You know what I told the guy? He's dangling this necklace out, and I'm saying, like, I don't want it. Here's the money. You know, I hope traveling mercies. Just the chance that maybe the story was true. Things always happen for a reason. We may call them coincidences. The neighbor down across the street, he's asking me, he says, well, what kind of church is it that you pastor over there? And I took a breath in, and I was getting ready to go through Evangelical Reformed Pentecostal with a small P. Before I could get that out, he said, you know, I kind of lean toward being a Calvinist. And I'm like, oh, my God. You traveled all the way from Washington State through Montana to come to Belle Fountain Neighbors in Missouri to live in a house across the street from a church that has, that's part of the Reformed thing, right? So when these things happen to us, here, we don't control it. I don't want to control that. The interruptions in our day, for me, I think are planned by God. They may be planned by God to help the person, A, or B, to test my, are you going to live according to Bruner's rule today, or both? But I would rather have a few less dollars in the bank and err on the side of mercy than to miss an opportunity. And it could be that it is a test, right? Examine yourselves. Take the test. Let's see if the faith actually lives in you. So here it is. Disciples are to render justice in a surprising way. Sometimes when this happens to you, just do not follow your baser instincts and just surprise yourself. Disciples are to render justice in a surprising way by the suspension of justice and the rendering of magnanimity. Say that word with me, magnanimity. A person is magnanimous. So there's a word in the New Testament that is often in the ancient world. It's found in the book of Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4, where Paul is admonishing two members of the same church to be reasonable. Epiakes, to be reasonable. This is a word that was often used in the ancient world to talk about a person who was magnanimous. They did not stand on the letter of the law. And I think that this is what Jesus is meaning when he's saying, do not resist evil. Our first instinct is when someone asks us to go a second mile, when someone asks to borrow money, when someone is begging, when someone wants our Prada and our Gucci, our first instinct immediately is to think, there's something nefarious going on. There's something evil going on. I do pray at times for the discernment of the Holy Spirit. And sometimes you just have to make a gut kind of instinctual, but surprise yourself and surprise that person. This is what Brunner is saying. The peacemaking command is the command of a radical rejection of self-assertion. There it is. My rights. Aren't you glad you only have to do this one day a week? You might be in this situation on a Tuesday, but that Tuesday has become your Friday. Let's look at Romans 12, 19. Look at verse 18. Let's back up. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, we can't be responsible for what someone else does necessarily, but we can be responsible for what we say, how we respond, how we react. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Now we move to sanctity. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink, for by so doing you will heap burning coals on his head. Now there's a lot of discussion about what this phrase means, this colloquial phrase, heap burning coals on their head. Some see it as a sign of judgment, you know, that if the person is being duplicitous and lying, judgment will catch up with them. Others say that if you woke up in the morning and the fire was out in your little stove, your little oven in your hut, you went to your neighbor with a pan on your head sitting on a pillow, and you asked for a few coals from their fire. Most think that this is what Paul means. In other words, heaping coals of fire on a person's head is a way of blessing them. If you're going to live a life of magnanimity, now, you can live a constipated and contracted life of justice. Just say, you know what? You treat me right, I'll treat you right. You do me wrong, I'm going to do you wrong. But that is a very narrow way to live. And Christ is calling for us to be reasonable, to be kind, to be gracious, to be forbearing. If you're going to walk this path of being magnanimous in your personal relationship with others and you are not going to assert yourself, you're going to deny yourself, if you're going to set aside your right to self-assertion, you will suffer. You will suffer. And that's because that's part of being a disciple of Jesus. If you're going to follow me, deny yourself, pick up your cross, and get in line. I got a long ways to go to be like my Lord. I've got a long ways to go to be like Him. Be merciful, dutiful, faithful, and true. It's a hostile world in which we live, a demanding world, a world that is riddled with injustice, Father, and sometimes we resort to the old Adam to respond. Help us. As your followers, as new creations in Christ Jesus, that the light of our good works would shine to such a degree that you would be glorified. We ask this now in Jesus' name.